everyone, Kelly Manns here, and welcome back to Women Making History. I hope everybody had a good week last week and a good weekend and happy Monday. Here we are at the beginning of another week and the beginning of another fun-filled podcast. If you haven't listened to last week's episode on Eleanor of Aquitaine, I highly recommend going back and listening to it before listening to this one. Last week, we covered Eleanor of Aquitaine's early life and tumultuous first marriage and her adventures on crusade. This week, the wild ride of her second marriage commences. If you thought her first marriage was unhappy, wait until you hear about her second one. Her life was like a real-life soap opera, and she was the main character. So let's buckle up and hold on for the ride. Eleanor's support bolstered Henry's campaign against his cousin, King Stephen of England. Henry felt that King Stephen wrongly seized the throne from his mother, Matilda. Following the death of King Stephen's own son, Eustace, he finally gave in and agreed to make Henry his heir. The following year, in 1154, King Stephen died and Henry succeeded without any opposition. Henry and Eleanor were crowned King and Queen of England. Once again, Eleanor was a queen in a less than stellar marriage. Henry and Eleanor argued relentlessly and their relationship was tumultuous. Eleanor was queen, but she could not dominate Henry as she had done Louis. Their marriage was a series of battles where Eleanor tried to control Henry, and Henry would retaliate by having affairs. Henry was quick to anger and had an impulsive nature, which of course only fueled the fire. He was habitually unfaithful, which resulted in him fathering several children out of wedlock. Henry even brought one of his illegitimate children to be raised in the royal nursery, most likely in an attempt to humiliate and infuriate Eleanor. If that was indeed his goal, he would have been sadly disappointed. Eleanor remained ambivalent and helped raise that child herself. Henry also carried on a very public affair with his most famous mistress, Rosamund Clifford. She was said to be extremely beautiful and was known as the Rose of the World. Henry hoped that by flaunting this affair, that it would push Eleanor towards an annulment. He would be sadly disappointed again because Eleanor did not take the bait. Eleanor again remained unbothered and focused on raising her children. It is rumored that Eleanor had an affair of her own, but it has never been proven, although even for the time, I don't think anybody would have blamed her. Rosamund eventually died in her mid-20s under mysterious circumstances. Rumors circulated that she may have been poisoned by one of Eleanor's sons or stabbed in a bathtub by an assassin sent by Eleanor herself. Again, nothing was ever substantiated or proven, so her death remains a mystery to this day. Even with all of the drama that was Henry and Eleanor's marriage, they did get along well enough to have 8 children of their own. Their children in birth order were William IX, Count of Poitou, Henry the Young King, Matilda, Duchess of Saxony, Richard I, King of England, better known as Richard the Lionheart, Geoffrey II, Duke of Brittany, Eleanor, Queen of Castile, Joan, Queen of Sicily, and John, also King of England, best known as Bad King John. Even with the joy of having heirs and children, nothing was ever peaceful for long. Henry's reign would be plagued with problems. One of his most famous problems was with Thomas Becket. When Henry had become king, he appointed Thomas Becket, who was 12 years his junior, as his chancellor, on the advice of the Archbishop of Canterbury. Becket's job was important and included the distribution of royal charters, writs, and letters. Becket and the king became close friends. People said that they had but one heart and one mind, and that they often behaved like 2 schoolboys at play. To say that Eleanor didn't approve of Becket would be an understatement. Henry didn't like staying in one place longer than a week or so as a result, Eleanor saw little of Henry. He was constantly riding from one corner of his empire to another. With Henry away, Eleanor was more than capable of running the country and taking care of business. It was her right, her duty even, as Henry's queen and consort. This wasn't the case, however. It was Becket who appeared to be running the country while Henry was away. Eleanor was incensed. She believed that the king had only one equal, and as his consort, it should have been her. She was angry and resentful. Eleanor felt that Henry's relationship with Becket pushed her to the sidelines of affairs and undermined her influence with the king. It is said that Becket dispensed patronage and received important visitors to England on Henry's behalf while he was abroad instead of Eleanor. When the current Archbishop of Canterbury died, Henry appointed Becket as the next archbishop. This decision angered many leading churchmen, as Becket had never even been a priest and had a reputation as a cruel military commander when he had fought against the French. Eleanor liked this idea even less than Becket being just a chancellor. After Becket was made archbishop, he wound up opposing Henry in the interest of the church. Henry, with his famous temper, would rant and rave and wish to be rid of Becket. Well, one day, Henry's knights took his wish to heart and murdered Thomas Becket in Henry's name. As a result, Henry was forced to publicly humble himself in order to avoid excommunication. While I'm sure Eleanor wasn't sad to see him gone, this wouldn't mark the end of her problems with Henry. There would be so many more problems. Eleanor and Henry's firstborn son, William, died at the age of 3, leaving their second son, Henry, as heir. Henry showed his son and all his children genuine affection while they were growing up, by all accounts. Henry became a jousting champion and a hero of the people. Henry was a vain and proud young man, however. He eventually married Marguerite of France, the daughter of Eleanor's first husband, Louis, and his second wife. Henry's father eventually crowned Henry co-king, and he was then known as the Young King. Being the vain and proud young man that he was, left little time or interest for him to have in governing. That didn't stop him from becoming frustrated and disgruntled with his father for not granting him any real power. Spurred on by his father-in-law, King Louis of France, Henry went to France to raise an army to bring against his father. He talked his younger brothers, Richard and Geoffrey, into joining him in rebellion against his father, which I can't imagine would have been terribly hard to do after watching their father's treatment of their mother over the years. At this time, Eleanor had left Henry for her own lands in Aquitaine after 15 years of marriage and countless transgressions against her. She had decided to stay in France when she accompanied her daughter Matilda to marry Henry, the Duke of Saxony. She had taken her younger sons, Richard and Geoffrey, with her and established her own court. She filled her court with poets and artists. Her eldest daughter from her first marriage, Marie, was a frequent guest. Even while she reigned there, Henry would try to regularly exert power over Aquitaine, but the lords there would only answer to Eleanor, which I'm sure she relished not only because her people were loyal to her, but because it probably angered her husband, Henry. Eleanor supported her sons against her estranged husband, their father. Some historians even say that she instigated the entire rebellion. As a result, the family was locked in battle. Eleanor granted her sons considerable military support. While some historians believe she did this because she didn't like how her power was being constrained in Aquitaine, there are others that believe she did this because of Henry's treatment of her and her son. Personally, I believe that it was most likely because of both of the reasons, and probably quite a few more that we don't know about. Eleanor was not the type of person to take any risk to her lands or her people lightly. The rebellion failed, and while Eleanor was on her way to seek refuge at the court of her ex-husband, King Louis of France, Henry's forces captured her. She was taken back to England, where she would remain a captive for 16 years. Eleanor would only be allowed out under guard for special family occasions such as Christmases and weddings, but was always kept away from her sons. 10 years after her capture and the failed rebellion, in 1173, young King Henry's forces were besieged by his fathers, and he was forced to flee. While wandering aimlessly through Aquitaine after he fled, he caught dysentery. Feeling his death drawing near, Henry was consumed with remorse over his sins against his father. He wrote to his father, the king, begging that he forgive his mother and release her. His letter and pleading were to no avail, however, and Eleanor would remain captive until King Henry's death. Upon young King Henry's death, though, the lands that Eleanor had granted him fell into dispute. Philip II, now King of France after Louis's death, felt that the lands belonged to his sister, Marguerite, the young king's widow. King Henry disagreed, unsurprisingly, and insisted that the lands revert back to Eleanor. He even allowed Eleanor the freedom to travel back to France to press her rule in Normandy, which she did successfully. For the next 6 years, Henry and Eleanor were together more often. Henry even gave Eleanor, rightfully, more prominence in government. Even with the unspoken truce, Eleanor was still kept under supervision to make sure that she did not cross Henry again. Eleanor, of course, never did, and in 1189, King Henry, still broken over the betrayal of his family, passed away. He and Eleanor's oldest surviving son, Richard, became king. Richard's first order was to set Eleanor free. He would also restore her control of the lands and revenues she had before the rebellion. Eleanor was back in her element. She toured England, gathering support for her son from the barons and exacting oaths from all freemen to be loyal to her son, their king. Richard, Eleanor's favorite son by most accounts, was crowned king at Westminster in 1189. He stayed in England only long enough to make the necessary financial arrangements for his involvement in the Third Crusade. Eleanor wanted him, and had been persuading him for many years, to get married and to produce an heir. He objected, but did eventually marry, although the marriage didn't produce any offspring. It is widely accepted now that Richard was gay and preferred the companionship of men, which was a crime punishable by death during his lifetime. Eleanor became Richard's closest advisor during his reign. She wielded considerable influence over the Regency Council that ruled while Richard was away fighting on crusade for 4 years. Even the men that Richard had appointed as Chancellor and Justiciar deferred to Eleanor's authority. When Richard was finally heading home from his crusade in December of 1192, he was captured by Duke Leopold of Austria, whom he had supposedly insulted during the crusade. He was then handed over to German Emperor Henry VI, who demanded an enormous ransom for Richard to be released. Over the next few months, Eleanor tirelessly raised the funds to pay Richard's enormous ransom and secured his release. Richard was released in 1194. Richard wouldn't be home for long, as he had always been more interested in the thrills of battle than the drudgery of governing. Soon, he got involved in more warfare in France, leaving Eleanor in charge again. In 1199, Richard was walking around a castle perimeter without his chainmail when he was struck by a crossbow bolt in the shoulder near his neck. After the arrow was removed, the wound became infected, which back then they did not have antibiotics, so Richard soon began to suffer the effects of gangrene and blood poisoning. Richard named his younger brother John as heir before dying in his mother's arms on April 6, 1199. Eleanor had lost yet another son. After Richard's death, Eleanor's youngest son, John, became King of England. At 77 years old, she traveled throughout her lands in Aquitaine in the early summer, granting privileges to churches and urban communities, as well as negotiating with the regional nobles to support John. It has been estimated that she traveled over 1,000 miles during that time. Her travels were far from over, though. John then sent Eleanor to Castile to escort her granddaughter, Blanche, to France to marry the Dauphin. Eleanor chose Blanche to marry the young Dauphin because she felt that she was more suited to be queen and because she felt that her name would appeal more to the French ears. She and Blanche then set off across the Pyrenees Mountains. They made it to Bordeaux in time to celebrate Easter. While they were there, Richard's former captain, who was going to escort them north through France, was killed by a man-at-arms paid by a rival captain. This tragedy really upset Eleanor, who was already suffering from fatigue. She didn't feel like she'd be able to make it to Normandy, so she and Blanche traveled in easy stages to the Valley of Loire, where she entrusted her granddaughter to the care of the Archbishop of Bordeaux, who safely saw Blanche the rest of the way. Exhausted, Eleanor went to Fontevraud to rest, but this indomitable queen was not done yet. War soon broke out between John and her grandson, Arthur I, Duke of Brittany. He was the son of Joffrey, who had also passed away at 28 years old when he was trampled in a melee. Arthur was trying to recover what he felt was his inheritance from John. Eleanor supported John as King of England in preference to her grandson. In the summer of 1202, Arthur besieged his grandmother at Marabout Castle. Eleanor valiantly held the castle for John, using stall tactics while getting an urgent message to John for aid. John responded and covered 80 miles in 48 hours to come to Eleanor's aid. John took Arthur prisoner, but Eleanor advised John to make peace with him. John didn't take her advice, though, and later ruthlessly murdered Arthur in ruin. Any reaction Eleanor may have had about this event wasn't recorded anywhere that I could find. I can't imagine that she would have been pleased by it. She had suffered so much loss and heartache, but she was incredibly resilient and strong in character. Eleanor retired to Fontevraud once again, where she hoped to live out her final days in peace, and she took the veil. Eleanor's incredible constitution and unmatched strength was at long last showing signs of failing. She was visited there by John, but was often reported to be unwell. The peace that her granddaughter's marriage to the Dauphin was supposed to secure was already starting to crack. John was unable to hang on to his French lands, and as Philip began the dismemberment of their French lands, Eleanor fell into a coma. The records of Fontevraud stated that she existed as one already dead to the world. Eleanor of Aquitaine died in 1204 at the ancient age of 82. She was entombed at Fontevraud next to her husband, Henry, and her favorite son, Richard. Her effigy, which historians believed that she helped design, depicts her reading a book, reflecting her lifelong love of learning. Eleanor was a woman of great wisdom, intelligence, and tenacity, with an even stronger will. She didn't allow the limitations of the time placed on her because of her sex get in the way of doing what she wanted or what she thought was right. Even though she was unhappily married twice, her deep and constant devotion to her children and her boldness is legendary. Eleanor is still renowned today, almost 1,000 years later, for her beauty, personality, and iron will. Her life and her children's lives are tantamount to the history of Europe. She was and continues to be one of the most powerful and influential figures of the Middle Ages. Eleanor's legacy truly lives on. Well, that's it for today. Thanks for joining me, and I hope you enjoyed this episode about Eleanor of Aquitaine as much as I did. Can you all see why she's one of my most favorite historical figures ever? She is the definition of a woman making history. What would Europe and the world, for that matter, be like without her influence and even her descendants? It's crazy to think that one person had such a massive role in shaping history as we know it. She truly deserves to be remembered. Let me know what you all think too. You can follow Women Making History on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And let me know who you want to hear about. Subscribe and leave a review. And thank you so much. I will talk to you all soon. Remember, go out and make a difference. Bye!